show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Alrighty then, about a minute past the hour of 6 p.m. here in the Eastern Standard Time Zone. A minute after 3 out on the West Coast. And, of course, down in beautiful Sydney, Australia, a minute after 10 in the morning. We are all over the world with the horn. And that's as it should be. And growing day by day by day. And of course, this is Wednesday. Wednesday's not just any day here on the horn. No, Wednesday Head On, as you know, if you are a regular Wednesday Head On, well...
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
That's right, darn tootin'. It's prayer meeting. Brethren and sistren, come on down to the altar. Get your magic cracker. Have a slug of the good stuff. And lay your hands upon the subwoofers and feel the healing rays of glory just a-rolling through you. Hallelujah. Amen and amen. And we got some fun, and I do mean fun, prayer meeting stories for you this evening. Oh, where shall we start? Let's see, Nice to see other parts of the media picking up on prayer meeting issues. Yes, I kid you not. It would appear that the BBC has picked up on prayer meeting. A relatively new BBC documentary is out there that has shown, not as a matter of supposition, but as a matter of ice cold, rock hard, diamond strength fact, that the man who now occupies the so-called See of St. Peter, Benny the Rat Ratzinger, former Nazi anti-aircraft gunner, played a leading role while he was John Paul II's hitman, and before that, in 2001, as a cardinal, issuing, really, a secret Vatican edict to bishops all over the world, dropping the hammer and telling them to put the church's interests ahead of the safety of the children being raped in their hundreds and in their thousands by Roman Catholic pedophile priests. The BBC show aired on a documentary program the BBC maintains called Panorama. And it deals with a memo that was enforced by Benny the Rat called Crimen Solicitationis. And it instructs bishops to shut up complaining parents of raped children and tell them that if they don't shut up, they will be excommunicated. It imposed an oath of secrecy on the child victim, on the priest dealing with the allegation, as well as any witnesses thereto. Yep. Nice, huh? Christ's successor on earth covered up kiddie rape. What would Jesus do? What would Jesus do? So there's that. And in a similar vein, Benny the Rat was going to go and give a little speech at a fairly important Italian university, university in Rome called La Sapienza. He was due to give that speech tomorrow, Thursday, to open its academic year. It didn't fly so well, however, with the students, the administration, and the academics and the students. The academics at the university signed a letter demanding that the hateful old anti-aircraft gunners stay the hell away from their institution of higher learning, based on comments that he made 15 years ago. Not 150, 15, brothers and sisters, 15 years ago, that indicated clearly, completely, his support for the 1633 trial and conviction of Galileo Galilei for the crime of heresy. Students protested outside the university. They carried banners that said this university is a lay institution and the Pope is not welcome. This is Italy. This is a victory. Italian students, Italian professors rejecting hate in any of its manifestations, and particularly in the manifestation of a former Nazi anti-aircraft gunner who is deemed the successor of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer. And yes, yes, a spokesman for the Vatican did confirm that the protests were sufficient to keep Benny the Rat away from La Sapienza University. Sort of like garlic being sufficient to keep a vampire away from the neck of a sleeping maiden. Oh, yes, oh, yes, oh, yes, oh, yes. We're only 8 minutes into the program, and we have lots and lots and lots of fun to be had tonight with the religion industry. But, you know, it's not just, you know, it's not just Benny the Rat. No. Let's go back, if you don't mind. I know, Mark, we played this during Mark's show. I think as long as we're one of the very few organizations that is playing this clip, we should just about set it up on a loop and just let it go continuously so that people can hear radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee laying out his idea for a future of America without a constitution. Yeah, no kidding. I think that's a darn fine idea. Here we go.
I have opponents in this race who do not want to change the Constitution. But I believe it's a lot easier to change the Constitution than it would be to change the Word of the living God. And that's what we need to do, is to amend the Constitution so it's in God's standards, rather than try to change God's standards so it lines up with some contemporary view of how we treat each other and how we treat the family.
Wow. You know, just wow. Some contemporary view of how we treat each other. Because do unto others as you would have them do unto you is entirely too liberal for a godly man like the Reverend Mike Huckabee, like radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee. You know, if we were a little bit more authoritarian and regimented on this network, I would put out a memo saying that henceforward, all references to Mike Huckabee must be to radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee. Because it's true. It's not propaganda. Liberal media. It's true. He is a radical. He is a fundamentalist. And yes, he has never stopped being a cleric. Radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee. What a hateful, hateful man. Amend the Constitution so it's in God's standards. Which God, Mike? Vishnu? Krishna? Shiva? Yahweh? Allah? Some animist spirit inside a mahogany tree somewhere in the wilds of the Amazonian basin? Which God, Mike? I mean, we can have this discussion if only you will tell me which God's standards are going to be embodied in the Constitution of the United States of America. Some contemporary view of how we treat each other and how we treat the family. Huh. Let's see. Let's start here, radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee. As opposed to how the church has treated the family over the past couple of millennia, I'd like to take the contemporary view that we don't haul members of the family away and burn them at the stake. That's my contemporary view of how we treat the family. I'd like to take the additional contemporary view of how we treat the family as being manifested in not drowning any women for being witches. How's that, radical cleric fundamentalist Mike Huckabee? Let's take the additional step of not forcing women caught in adultery to wear a scarlet A upon their clothing. Is that okay with you, radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee? And let's presume, let's take the additional contemporary step in treating the family of assuming that a child born of a mixed-race couple is still a human being, as opposed to the positions taken by the Baptist Church in the 19th century. Is that all right with you, radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee? Those are all such superficial issues where radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee is concerned. There are other issues as well. He wants to amend the Constitution so it's in God's standards. I need a little help here because I don't have the reference right off the top of my head or anything. But, because, you know, these guys are always Old Testament so-called Christians and not New Testament Christians. I need to know how many wives one man may have, because a biblical worldview states that, polygamy is not only okay, but expected by God. So how many wives can we have? I mean, I'm having enough of a chore just keeping it all together with one wife. But if the Bible wants me to have more, I'll just have to, deal with it and go find me some more. Of course, that probably wouldn't ring hollow with Willard Romney either, for that matter. But I mean, if we're gonna make the Constitution conform to God's standards, we got a lot of work to do, and we need to get right on it there, radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee. Everybody say it with me. Radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee. Radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee. It doesn't take long until it's as easy to say radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee as it is to say former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee. and you have the advantage of actually being current and up to date when you say radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee instead of former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee, because he may be a former governor, but he is still, by God, a radical fundamentalist cleric. Thank you, Peter Godbold. If it is discovered, this from Deuteronomy 22:13-21, today's reading, brothers and sisters, if it is discovered that a bride is not a virgin, the Bible demands that she be executed by stoning immediately. Deuteronomy 22:22 says, if a married person has sex with someone else's husband or wife, that both adulterers be stoned to death. Mark New Testament, Mark chapter 10, verses 1 to 12, say that divorce is strictly forbidden in both testaments, as is remarriage of anyone who has been divorced. Let's see, there's Leviticus 18:19. The Bible forbids a married couple from having sexual intercourse during a woman's period, and if they disobey, they both have to be executed. Back to the New Testament, Book of Mark, chapter 12, verses 18 to 27. Hallelujah, praise Jesus. If a man dies childless, his widow is ordered by biblical law to have intercourse with each of his brothers in turn until she bears her deceased husband a male heir. Kind of makes me glad I ain't got no brothers. Deuteronomy 25, chapter 25, verses 11 to 12. If a man gets into a fight with another man and his wife seeks to rescue her husband by grabbing the enemy's genitals, her hand shall be cut off. How glory, and no pity shall be shown her. Amen. Hey, look, that's what the Constitution looks like when it's in accord with God's standards. I wonder who, once Huckabee's in the White House, and frankly, let me be very, very clear with you about this. I give him 50-50 chances right now of being in the White House. I wonder, and he starts making the Constitution comport with God's standards. One, will there be a reality television show to get him wives 2, 3, and 4? And do we refer to the second wife as the second lady, the third wife as the third lady, and the fourth wife as the fourth lady? And don't you think that's going to cause some inter-family squabbles? All those marriages between one man and several women? I don't know if he's going to have time to be president. Like I said, and I mean, I'm not trying to make trouble here, but the being married to one woman is, and that's not with regard to the particular woman. I'm just saying being married to one woman is a damn chore sometimes, okay? Because being married to me, I know, is a chore. Lord, we're so screwed. Because, see, radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee will beat Obama, and he will beat Hillary Clinton. There's the only person he would that would have a chance against him is John Edwards. Sorry, it's just how it is. Just how it is. You know, you better put on the armor of righteousness and get your armor of God pajamas out, friends and neighbors, because it's going to be a mighty damn bumpy ride for the next 8 years if radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee gets into the White House. And like I said, right now, I'd give him pretty damn good odds. I mean, Willard Romney had to win Michigan last night. His father, the illegal immigrant, was governor there, and the Romney name means something in Michigan. Plus, as Mark noted in his program, he did lay out that sort of sunshine and violets view of a Michigan future where we lose no manufacturing jobs, and in fact, we make more Hummers and more SUVs. All glory. So he had to win Michigan, which means that and Giuliani's pinning all of his hopes on Florida. I don't know why he thinks Florida's going to do it for him. But then again, yeah, because I think North Florida right-wing Republicans, and Peter Godbold, you can straighten me up if I'm wrong on this one, North Florida knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing repiglickins are going to run, not walk, run to the polls to vote for radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckstervey in the Florida repiglickin primary. Just remember, just as a gentle reminder, please remember that every time we look up and go, oh, no, he could never be president, that's the guy who winds up being president on the Republican side. We all looked at George W. Bush in 1999 and went, oh, you're kidding, right? Oh, he's dumber than a hollow stump. He can't be president. Yeah, and we were still chuckling a little bit in December 2000, weren't we? No, we weren't, because he occupied the White House. And same with his daddy. Weasley, little scrawny little wimp that he was. Ah, he couldn't possibly, and then we nominated Michael Dukakis, and thanks for playing, here's your copy of the home game and some other lovely parting gifts. It is graver than you think. Far, far graver than you think. And in South Carolina, well, radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee has a plan for South Carolina, too. And he is absolutely drilled down into the very heart of the South Carolinian zeitgeist. And he proved it this morning in an appearance on the Scarborough program on MSNBC. You know, the sons of bitches who wouldn't let Dennis debate. But yeah, he proved it. How's he going to get that right-wing, mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking, repig-licking South Carolina vote to come hustling out to the polls for him, radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee? Here's how. The secret, the password, is squirrel.
They do like people like you.
Well, South Carolina is a great place for me. I mean, I know how to eat grits. I speak the language. And, you know, we even know how to talk about eating fried squirrel and stuff like that. So we're on the same wavelength.
Yummy, by the way, Mika,
I bet you never did this.
Yeah.
When I was in college, we used to take a popcorn popper, because that was the only thing that they would let us use in the dorms, and we would fry squirrel and popcorn poppers in the dorm room.
You know, somehow I feel a lot better now about sitting in my dorm room smoking dope. But, you know, that's me. Yeah, fried squirrel. Look, first of all, as a West Virginian and a Southerner, let me explain something. Ain't nothing wrong with fried squirrel. Squirrel gravy be tasty. Squirrel brains? No. But I know people who are big squirrel brain eaters, too. Fried squirrel's pretty damn good when you get right down to it. Tastes like chicken. But there, the image in my mind of, because he was portly then, portly radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckstervey in his dorm room at Wachita Baptist University with a popcorn popper, frying squirrel. I mean, I'm pretty down with popcorn poppers. Had a couple myself during my college days. When dinosaurs roamed the earth and it didn't come in little microwavable bags yet. And I could never quite get, but I can't, how do you get that damn thing hot enough to fry a squirrel? That's the part, but, you know, so I think he's lying, but, you know, he's trying to shock the Yankees. You know, I know how to eat grits. And, of course, the implication there is that, you know, folks like Mitt Romney are up East Yankees who'd probably sit down in the cafe and say, well, yes, I think I'd like a grit, please. It's always grits. Grits are wonderful. In Italy, they call it polenta. Very similar stuff. Grits is grits, baby. And I like mine done up with a little bit of cheese and garlic, but I do know people who put molasses on them, so, you know, far be it from me to criticize. Most of the time, though, it just comes to you with a little bit of butter and salt, maybe some pepper. But grits is mighty good eating. But it ain't enough to make me vote for radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee, nor any of the rest of this exchange.
Oh,
I bet you never did
too
that.
Too much information.
Oh, no, I just don't see Mika frying squirrel and a popcorn popper in the door.
You know, Governor?
No, she'd have the servants happening. Do it, Governor.
If you show me...
You know, Governor? No, Mika. It's, you know, Reverend? You know, Preacher? You know, Pastor? You know, Radical Fundamentalist Cleric? It's not Governor. Sheesh. We're screwed.
A recipe?
Well, I don't know if I want to see it. I was going to say we're going to be down in South Carolina. I'd like to meet you, but we'll keep the squirrels out of it.
Governor Huckabee, it's Will.
We'll keep the squirrels out of it. You know, when you come from Appalachia, you realize that your forebears have had some lean years, and there were probably plenty of occasions when having a few squirrels around to eat was a hell of a lot better than starving. And see, that's where this urbane chic thing loses out to the witty, folksy, homey charm of radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee. Oh, hell, I bet squirrel. And that's supposed to make all the South Carolinians and all the Southerners go, well, dang, if he's that squirrel, he can be my president. Last time I voted for president, I voted for somebody I wanted to have beer with. Now I'm going to get a feller that don't drink beer, but I can have a plate of mess of squirrel and squirrel brains gravy with. Yeehaw! Hot damn, that's good eating.
The squirrel sounds great.
Yeah.
I prefer grilling possum on the hood of my Ford Bronco.
Ho, ho, ho. There's another one of them Yankees going to talk about eating possum. Somebody, hey, Grandpa, what's for supper? It's hee-haw all over again. Dang. Man, they're shoving him into the White House, aren't they? I may find myself saying this several times tonight. We are so screwed. Let's go to the phones. Hi, who have I got?
Robert in Japan.
Good morning. Robert, how are you? Good morning.
Doing okay. How about you?
Getting by. Scared to death.
Yeah, I can understand that. Did you get my Christmas present?
Oh, I absolutely did. And I even checked the Japanese lottery number. That was just, and the book was just beautiful.
No, thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Writing fables is one of my hobbies during the weekend. So,
now is that book available now too?
Yeah, that's on Amazon. I'm doing another edition to reduce the page length and the cost, but you know, still keep the number of fables and stuff. But It's a book that kind of grabbed my attention because a lot of Japanese don't know about their own legends and myths and stuff nowadays. And so and there was this old book, 100 years old, in my Meiji-era library for engineers, and it just sort of said, you know, rewrite me.
Oh, so, wow. So you took those and sort of, I mean, you translated them into English and sort of modernized them and so forth?
Yeah, this was actually a book that was written in English, strangely enough. I mean, it was a very unusual specimen to find.
Oh, wow.
But then, you know, the legends would offer several pages, and so I would have to, you know, take part of the legend and rewrite them into a fable. But, you know, for the listeners, it's called Inside the Chrysanthemum, New Japanese Fables. So, the artwork, I went through different sources and found some nice artwork to go with it, so it looks pretty nice, I think.
It's beautiful. It is absolutely gorgeous.
Well, I hope your children enjoy it. Something to, you know, read.
Well, we sat down together in the living room and just went through it together, and they thought one of them took it to school to, you know, show and tell, so.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad. I just finished up my Christian fables, which actually, it was December 31st, which actually I think speaks to the real idea of what Christianity is all about, but I'll have to get those edited and get those out maybe in a few more months, but I'll send that to you later on.
Oh, I'd love to see. I can't wait to see it.
Okay, great. So So anyway, yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about Mitt Romney and whatever.
Huxterby? Radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huxterby?
That's right. The worst-case scenario I see, as I was saying in the chat room, would be a Mitt Romney, Huckabee, or vice versa ticket for the GOP.
Well, you know, that actually makes more sense than I like to let on, Robert, because Mike Huckabee would, first of all, he's got a history of finding his way into the chief executive's office when the chief executive shuffles off this mortal coil. That's how he got to, or shuffles off to prison, as the case may be. That's how he got to be governor of Arkansas for 10 years. He got 2 years of Jim Guy Tucker's term, and then 8 years, two terms of his own. But the other thing, though, is that he would balance the magic underwear populate my own universe after I die weirdness of Mitt Romney's Mormonism with his own so-called Christian fundamentalist weirdness. I can see where there are political pundits in the Republican Party who would think it would be a win-win proposition.
Right, sure.
I could also see McCain choosing him as a running mate.
You need to get the Deep South. I mean,
yeah,
the Deep South.
Or Giuliani, but I think Giuliani's dead in the water.
Yeah, I don't see much room for him. But yeah, I mean, because Mitt Romney being voted in the South, I just have a hard time with that. He's a little bit too northern, too slick, and I don't know.
The Deep South is still getting used to the idea of Catholics.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Mormons? What?
Right. Well, I had one little incident with Mormons in my second year in Japan. I actually worked in a language school for about 9 months. I was hoping for only 2 or 3 months, actually, but that didn't work out. But, I was stuck with these lunatics for about 9 months. I tell you frankly, I mean, most people don't know what Mormons like. Once you work with them, and once you're around them for a long time, you really get to see how butt-ass crazy they are.
I think that's the first time you've ever gone there, Robert. I'm sorry. I left.
Well, yeah. What can I say? Good morning.
Butt-ass crazy. Yep. Yeah.
That's crazy. I remember during one teacher's meeting, the owner, who was a Mormon, of course, was given a speech about democracy and how it just doesn't work. And so, and all the little Mormon heads are moving up and down. Yep. And I thought, gee whiz, but it was the closest thing I had ever been to in being in a cult. It was really the worship of the leader, no matter whoever the leader is. But, it's literally worship. I mean, every moment, every thought should be about the language school and promoting the language school. I mean, that was like my first couple of days in. I'm like, what? And the leader can do no wrong. But, the leader, of course, was also having affairs with the secretary. So,
nice.
I mean, it's nice. Yeah. It's such a farce. And, of course, he was a passive-aggressive, a lot of passive-aggressive stuff. And he would lie out of his ass. And I realized that the lies, I mean, we would, find out how quickly, it was a lie just by asking, and then we realized that the lies were actually a method of intimidation, because if you confronted him, he would then just fire you. So you realize, hey, he's crazy. Therefore, he's crazy. I better be careful and not do anything that displeases him. So it was really an introduction to right-wing thinking and right-wing behavior, because he's actually no different from what I think Bush is behaving.
But Robert, you've seen some of Redneck America, right?
Yeah, of course.
Or fundamentalist America, or I don't equate I don't equate redneck with fundamentalist, but the two little circles in the Venn diagram do have an overlap. Can you see an America that wakes up on November the 9th, 2008, to find out that the radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huxterby is the president of the United States? Can you see that? Is that just, or am I beyond the pale?
I can see it. Because, let's look up. I mean, it's either that or McCain. But The others, I just don't see much hope for. So it's bad. I mean, worse plus worser. I mean, it's one of those situations where if I lived in the States, I would be finding a way to, you know, to move out of the country because, you know, they're going to do some really strange ass things. So, I mean, you got to look at your options. I mean, that's what I would be thinking. So.
A constitutional amendment to ban abortion and a constitutional amendment to define marriage as the union of one man and however many women, depending on which Bible you're reading, I guess.
Yeah, but that's the beginning, though, yeah.
Yeah, that's the front end, and when I think about the stuff that that is going to be facing this new president by the time January 20th, 2009 rolls around, I'm thinking that those are not that shouldn't even be on the first page of the to-do list.
Oh, God, yeah. It's the same. I mean, it's like in Japan. I mean, Japan has become so much of a colony of the United States that, I mean, it's becoming so evident. When Abe was president, the first thing that he was focused on was the refueling missions in the Indian Ocean for the anti-terrorism law, which, you know, we basically refuel American ships or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that was his number one priority. And, you know, for Japanese, that's not even on the radar. I mean, that's not even 2000. Kazumi, he got reelected on, get this, the privatization of the post office. Because we have a post office that, you know, you have bank accounts in the post office, so there's trillions of dollars or yen worth in that post office. And the Western investors wanted to get their hands on that. And the only way they could do it was through a privatization of the post office. But for the Japanese public, privatization of the post office was like number 30 in terms of their priorities. But that's what happened. That's what was pushed, and they privatized it. So, and it's become more inconvenient as a result.
And probably less efficient, too, right?
Well, I mean, I went down to get a stamp. I think it was on Saturday night. And they usually have a little window that's open. And then I was told I had to walk down to the 7-Eleven to buy the stamp. And then I can mail it. They used to have a machine right out front, out in the front door.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, they got rid of the machine, and I have to go down to 7-Eleven and buy the goddamn stamp. So,
oh. And was it really a 7-Eleven?
Yeah. 7-Elevens are real ubiquitous here.
Okay, this is my little bit of a jerk moment, Robert. Who works in the 7-Elevens in Japan?
A lot of my students. In fact, my student was there. They're selling the stamps. One of my students. So yeah, a lot of Japanese people. You know. So.
Okay. So it's
Mr. Donuts, McDonald's. What else?
You know, that's
pretty much it. Yeah.
Forgive me, but I consider that a shame.
I was disgusted. I mean, I have to walk a block down to get a stamp because you got rid of the stupid machine. But, I mean, they're also closing a lot of rural post offices. We did this back in the 1980s with Reagan. You remember this.
Oh, sure. There used to be several post offices around here where I live that closed during the Reagan administration.
And you know, they were going to privatize, and somehow that didn't work out so well because it was, you know, really pissing off, I think, the rural folk. And they backed off on the privatization, I think, in the States. I mean, it wasn't really privatized. They were going to go all the way through, I think. But the stamps were getting more expensive because you have to pay for the profit margin and then, you know, closing offices and stuff. So the same thing here. But
and, you know, it's part of, excuse me.
Mm. Yeah.
It's like I don't know what's blooming in mid-January in West Virginia, but something's had me sneezing like a freak all day long. So I didn't want to subject you to that. But you know, everything. I hate to say it, but you know, it used to be that couture came from France. You know, the worldwide leader in leather goods and yada yada came from Italy. Germany was the home of the absolute cutting edge in automobiles. America sets the trends for the world in economic terms, and there's no getting around it. So, you know, you say it's getting worse. It's going to get worser, as to beat up the language a little bit, because when I don't know what's going to happen to this country, Robert, when the bad paper that we've hung all around the world starts coming home to roost. And the economies start tanking in other countries. And they start thinking about, you know, calling the note.
Right, right. Well, I noticed they're trying to lower interest rates yet again. And I was thinking, well, geez, I mean, if they do this, the dollar's going to continue to sink, which means in more inflation. So I just see this is all a repeat of Ford and Carter, you know. And then if a Democratic person does get elected, then they'll raise the interest rates, you know, into the double digits just like they did with Carter. But it just seems like a whole repeat.
Well, for those who have the skills to look back that far, it does. And that's largely, Robert, because it is. You know, everybody, you know, you can't turn on right-wing radio without going, you know, maybe you might go a day before there's some sleazy reference to Jimmy Carter tried to destroy the economy.
Yeah.
What a bunch of liars. You know, why are we surprised? But, you know, what a bunch of liars. Jimmy Carter's inflation was created under the Richard Nixon administration. Exactly. And was a direct outgrowth of, among other things, the Vietnam War.
Right.
And
I mean, that's, yeah. And so people couldn't connect the dots on that, and so we're just going to go through this all over again, one more time. And I don't know. I mean, it's doom or doom, because if they lower interest rates, the dollar continues to collapse because the Western investors will take all the money out. And if they raise interest rates, then it is harder for people to borrow money. And but there's no incentive to save money in the States, and so. Anyway, I just don't see. And then every American I heard owes $50,000.
I thought it was higher than that, but yeah.
Yeah. So your family technically owes $250,000, right? So $300,000.
Yeah, we'll get right on that.
I hope so. So I just don't see how they're going to get out of this bid. I mean, but I also see sometimes maybe they're trying to kill the dollar so they can get this North American free trade thing going, and then they recreate North American dollar, perhaps, and then have a superstructure that supersedes the Constitution and the American laws and stuff like that.
You know, the funny thing is that it's always the Democrats who are accused of wanting to create one world government, but it's always the Republicans who seem to be making the greatest strides toward bringing it to reality.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
I just don't, yeah.
Well, I mean, but the thing that's disturbing to me is that I mean, I know that John Edwards would be in favor of having of at least taking another look at NAFTA and CAFTA and all of that foolishness. You know, Senator Clinton, every time a free trade agreement has come up, she has, you know, not walked or crawled, but run to vote for it.
Yeah,
and that's that's poison to our economy.
That's why I ended up by absentee ballot voting for Dennis Kucinich. I just got sick and tired of all this because they were never talking about those trade agreements in any of these debates, and that's the problem. I mean, you can sit there and dance around all these other issues, but if you don't solve the real problem, then you're not going to get to the solution. So, but you know, I just get more and more disgusted about how they're treating Dennis in these debates. So.
I am too, and I don't. And we are shown, you know, if nothing else, I wish Republicans would take this to heart too, and maybe they are, since it's since their ox, some of them feel that their ox has gotten gored in the form of the exclusion of Ron Paul. But anytime we choose to limit discussion in this country, we do it to our own detriment, and we do it at our own hazard and peril. And I don't see why people see that as a partisan issue. I mean, there are, based on some of the places I go and wander around on the internets and whatever, Robert, I see Clinton supporters and I see Obama supporters, and for the most part, even Edwards supporters. Well, you know, Dennis doesn't need to be in the debate. Well, you know, I didn't get to watch it live last night, but I went back and I watched some of the clips of that MSNBC. POS, and you know what? We desperately need Dennis, because we need somebody who will resist the baser impulses of the networks to control the information. There was a reason they didn't want Dennis in there, because it made it would have made it terribly, terribly uncomfortable and harder for Tim Russert and Brian Williams, who frankly should, you know, just mail in their journalistic credentials and have done with it. It made it harder for them to turn it into a race baiting game. You know, the first three questions from Williams were race-based. The first five from Russert were race-based. And that's when the guy in the audience stood up and said, stop with the race questions. And they dragged him out for it.
It's getting more and more pointless. I mean, I think the last debate with Clinton and Edwards and Obama was just like a little forum. It wasn't a debate at all. I mean, without Dennis being there. So that's just... I just don't know what else to do.
No. Oh, by the way, on an entirely separate note, Robert, John Fox, our resident environmentalist down in Australia, is asking me to ask you to look around in the Japanese press and see if you can find some stories on the whaling war going on, or suggest a good English news site there.
Okay, I'll look around for that. Sure.
Do you have John's email?
No, I don't. What is it?
John at head on, J-O-N. J-O-N.
Oh, okay.
At headonradionetwork.com.
Okay. Good enough. That's easy enough.
Is anything popping up on the radar there? Have you heard anything about this whaling controversy?
Just what I've seen in the Japan Times. But, you know, it's pretty much a rehash of what's been in the newspapers elsewhere. This is something that's never on the radars of Japanese. I mean, in fact, my Kyushu is really opposite of Shimonoseki, which is right across the Kambon Straits over on Honshu. And that is the number one whaling city in Japan. But basically, no one in the Japanese population cares about whaling anymore, except these old fossils that keep this up, you know. And in fact, nobody really eats whale anymore. I mean, it's a bland, tasteless thing. Not that I've ever heard of, but I'm just, you know, telling you what I've heard. And so it's just kind of like these old men that just keep this old issue going because they have nothing else to do in their lives. And it just doesn't stop. So I don't know. But yeah, I'll look around for it. I mean, It's not an issue in Japan. It's almost never on the radar.
Well, it's apparently it's just plain old fashioned ugly the way it's playing out in Australia. But and John covered it at some length, considerable length last night on his program. He won't be on the air tonight, but I'm sure he'd love to see the Japanese perspective.
Okay. Well, the Japanese have a hard time forming opinions, and so it's, you know, there may not be a Japanese perspective, except on the whaling industry, which, you know, who cares? I mean, one of the reasons they like hunting whales is because they say that the whales eat too much fish, and so
say that again.
The whales eat too much fish.
Even the ones that only eat plankton.
Yeah, those two. And sometimes they interfere with the beetle that goes across the, that goes over to Japan, to Korea. A couple of beetles run into the whales and, you know, messes up the boats. So, Japan eats 30%, bend your mind around this, 30% of the world's fish.
Wow.
So, that's a lot, yeah.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, you know, they need bait for those fish, and so, you know, you're looking at even the small fish, you know, there's a big trench up there. But I sent some pictures off to you by email of...
Yeah, they just rolled in. I can't wait to see them.
Yeah, should be some good desktop pictures for you, at least, I hope. Two little notes before I leave. I saw a car for the first time in my life I've never seen before in Japan. Never thought I would actually see in Japan. You know what it is?
What's that?
A Hummer. A goddamn Hummer in Japan. Bend your mind around that.
At least tell me there was a gaijin driving it.
I don't know. I couldn't tell. But my part-timer said, they had seen two Hummers parked right across from each other in the house next to their house. And so we were all kind of looking at each other because gas prices here are like $4.50 a gallon, roughly, if you convert it all. And those damn things get, what, five, 5 miles to the gallon.
Yeah, they get roughly the same mileage as a Sherman tank.
Yeah, so I just couldn't understand what the whole damn point was. And the other little point I had an interesting.
Well, but wait, Robert. If there's somebody there with a Hummer, that means there's somebody in Japan selling Hummers.
Yeah, I mean, and I was trying to think about that too, because you know I'm way out in the sticks down in Kyushu, a southern island of Japan. This is not Tokyo, and I just can't imagine who's selling these things and to whom, because they're pretty damn expensive. So. My family, I just kind of walked around the car, and look at this.
It's another example of what you mentioned. You know, bless our little red, white, and blue hearts. We're sometimes kind of like a disease, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, the worst seems to always prevail. I don't know why, we did have finally one innovation that came to Japan, and I pulled into a gas station, and the guy motioned me forward and then said to get out of the car. And I said, what? And he said, get out of the car. So I got out of the car, and he said, okay, go to the pump. And I went to the pump and kind of stared at it, and he said, okay, now you put your money in here. And so what it was is Japan's first self-service gas station.
Wow, you mean there are still people who pump your gas in Japan?
Yeah, I mean, for 14 years here, I've always had someone pump the gas because the government said Japanese people were essentially too stupid to pump their own gas and wasn't safe. So.
Well, at least somebody had a job.
Yeah, there always had lots of part-time jobs for people around. So, but this was the first self-serve. But, you know, they needed someone there to explain it to the population because nobody understood how to do it. So you put your money in and you press how much you wanted, and we actually, you know, I had actually had to do something I've always done in America since I was 16, you know, bought my own gas and do the bid. And then after that was all done, went back to the machine and said, okay, now let's play the roulette wheel. So they had a little, you know, roulette wheel on the machine. I pressed it and got a free box of tissues and a discount.
Oh my God! Never got the discount and the tissues here, but
the roulette wheel, I think, on the gas station machine is very important. I think, yeah. I mean,
I want one here.
Yeah.
You know, free cup of coffee. You know, jelly donut. Sure.
Yeah. Hello. Right. Discount. Yeah. So, but yeah, check the lottery ticket on your postcard. I mean, we always do that every year. Comes out on, I think, on the 27th. Who knows? You might pick up a free TV.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, when Korea got into that recession a long time ago, back in 1995,
yeah.
They realized they were in a real dilemma. They needed to raise money because more people were homeless and stuff. You know, the economy was crashing. And if they raised taxes, then that would exacerbate the problem. So what they decided to do was to actually have coupons for every item that was sold, or merchants could opt in for it, and then each item would actually have a lottery ticket with it. Okay, and then maybe you win a TV, maybe you win this. I mean, it wasn't maybe necessarily big money necessarily, but the merchants loved it because they sold more items. The government got about 50% of the take, so they got income that way, painlessly. And the customers liked it because they not only got a product, but they also got a lottery ticket. So it was only like maybe 20, 30 more cents or 10 more cents for the item. So
reminds me of the line from The Maltese Falcon, Robert. It's the stuff that dreams are made of.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's painless ways of getting out of recessions, you know. I mean, it just requires a lot of new ideas and new thinking. But for conservatives, that's just not, you know, that's not in their cards. So...
Well, we've got it, and I'll go back and have a look, and that's just cool. I'll let you know if we're the big winner.
Okay.
All right.
I'll let you go. But yeah, I think it's a good idea for maybe other viewers to send in some of the pictures of where they're at, and maybe you could post them on a homepage, you know, maybe under a link.
Yeah, maybe a little archive page, a little where we are page.
Yeah, where we are and different people, you know, where the places are at, and you know. More of an international perspective or whatever.
Wonderful. Yeah, that's excellent. Robert, have yourself a great day.
You too, now.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Our good friend Robert in Kitakyushu, Japan. And let's see, onward. Hi, who have
I
got?
There.
Hey, Susan, what's up?
Oh, I was listening to your... you talk about the dear old Huckstervy fanatic right wing.
That's radical cleric. Fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee.
Yep. Two things. First of all, this doesn't have much to do with anything, but I thought I'd throw it in. I've eaten rattlesnake. And yes, it does taste like chicken.
So have I. I've had alligator, and it tastes like chicken.
That qualify me for being the president of the United States.
Well, there's something kind of exotic about eating rattlesnake, but you know, squirrels
not
just
out
sort
here,
of.
There isn't.
Well, I know, but squirrels just kind of prosaic, I guess. I mean, squirrel, and well, yeah, I mean, you heard in the clip the place that the little sidekick to Joe Scarborough goes is he says. Well, I prefer to grill possum on the hood of on the engine manifold. You know, what an ass.
Yeah, he's never been there. I doubt if he knows what possum even looks like.
I've eaten groundhog, okay? Just to say I had.
Yeah. Personally, if the dear old reverend is going to be eating squirrel, I hope he gets one with the plague.
Oh, I hope somebody gets some brains in there.
With the plague.
Yeah, because, well, no, not plague, mad squirrel disease. Of course, then again, he may already have, and that sort of explains the entire radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee campaign. He's got mad squirrel disease.
Yeah. Okay, and my second point was, anywhere else in the world, actually in a couple places in the world, what dear old Reverend Mike is proposing is known as Sharia law.
Well, yeah, it is, if you happen to be Muslim.
Yep. And Robert mentioned making plans, concrete plans, if what to do if he does get into the White House. I am actively looking right now for a country that will take my husband and me. We will not stay in this country. We will leave it.
I'm hearing that more than I care to admit.
I don't care if I have to leave in the clothes on my back. I'm gone.
If it's well, that's if it's Huckabee. What if it's Romney?
Well,
that guy's not exactly sane.
No, but he's not as loony as Huckstervy.
Well, for me, it just sort of depends on how you define loony.
Yeah, you know, there's levels of insanity.
I mean, this guy believes that when he dies, he's going to become a god in his own right and populate his own planet.
Well, that's fine by me. If he wants to believe that, have at it.
But you don't think that kind of insanity bleeds over into one's day-to-day activities and informs the way that one might govern?
Well, I don't know.
I mean, you got George Bush.
Yeah.
4 years ago, explaining to the Israelis that God told him to strike Saddam.
Yeah, I put Romney in the same category as I do all of the other Republicans. Disastrous. But not catastrophic. That's reserved for the Reverend Mike, because the Reverend Mike is catastrophic.
So you don't, on the face of it. You're not afraid to live in an America run by Rudy Giuliani.
I didn't say that. Okay, Rudy, he's a pragmatist. He'll get along to go along. You show him enough opposition, he'll buckle.
Okay. How about McCain?
Yeah, McCain's different. McCain's actually got principles. Not many of them, but he does have few. Unfortunately, most of them have to do with killing brown people. I really don't want... The problem is, he's not the type that I can see leaving the country for. I would fight against. But he doesn't scare me the way Huckabee does.
Well, I admit that, Huckabee is the scariest of the lot. I mean, the only way he could not be the scariest of the lot is if Fred Phelps suddenly decided he was going to run.
Yeah.
But Huckabee, Fred Phelps is mean on his face, okay? Huckabee's got that, you know, aw shucks grin going for him, that sort of, hey, Sergeant Carter, I'm going to be president, you know, that sort of thing going on.
Huckabee is a smart Fred Phelps.
Yeah, I can see that. And as a consequence, he's the one that puts the fear of God in me.
Yeah, because he's smart enough to try and hide what he actually is until he gets his hands on all that power. And then it's Katie bar the door.
Whew. Scary. Scary, Susan.
You bet you're bippy.
Well, thank you very kindly. And by the way, ramen to you. This is prayer meeting night.
Ah, well, man, if you check the show post, I did put in there, you know, never know, Bishop Bob might be wearing his pirate regalia.
I'm still working on finding, I don't want just any low-class pirate costume. I've got to have this really, I've got to have a really good one, but I found the puffy pirate shirt the other day. And
cool.
Yeah, I've got the website saved, so when it comes time to do the pirate costume, I'm not doing the pirate costume until we're doing video, though.
Okay, you're going to need the tricorn hat. The boots are going to be a problem.
Well, but we'll probably just be shooting from the waist up, so, you know.
Okay. In that case, then you're good. The big problem is going to be... The vest isn't going to be a problem. If necessary, I'll make you a...
The parrot is the problem, Susan. The parrot is the problem.
The parrot's the problem.
Yeah, because I'm all about authenticity, and, you know, I want the real deal up here, and a nice green parrot runs about $2,000, so...
Know anybody who's got a cockatoo you could sell?
Yeah, but that doesn't work in the scale, Susan, you know... No, that's a cockatiel. No, the cockatoo would work. They're mean. Of course, I could be exotic and go toucan.
Yeah, that you could.
But he might reach over and snap, you know, snap my nose off. I don't know. But you know, I think after we go to video, I think yeah, that'll be fun.
Well,
Yar.
You did get that recipe for making a flying spaghetti monster, I think.
Oh, yes, I did, and we're so going to do that. I showed that to the kids, and they're like, oh, can we take flying spaghetti monster snacks to school? Absolutely. Because I think you could modify it a little bit with maybe some melted butterscotch or peanut butter chips and really make a tasty little snack out of it. And making the edible eyes was really the be-all and end-all to it, so, yeah.
His noodly goodness ought to go over real well in your school.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it will. It will. With the kids, yes. With the fundy teachers, not so much.
This I got to hear about when you do it.
Susan, you have a wonderful night.
You too. Ramen.
Ramen. Yar.
Yar.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, prayer meeting Wednesday and a little bit of... collegiality here in the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster. Let's see. And, you know, the cool thing about the Flying Spaghetti Monster is it's sort of an open-source religion. So you can develop it as you go along. It makes it a lot handier that way. Tell you what, we'll take a quick break. If you're on hold, please stay that way. If you want to get involved in the program, come on down to the altar and participate. Testify, brothers and sisters. Testify on this prayer meeting Wednesday. You're more than welcome to do so. I understand what Susan's saying. It is the prospect of a Mike Huckabee presidency. Well, I've got a very good conservative friend I know, it sounds, but we've been friends forever, and we forgive a lot in each other, who says that if it's down to Obama and Huckabee, I mean, this guy's a rock-ribbed, hardcore, you know, Republican type. He says he'll vote for Obama, no problem. However, he says, if it's Hillary versus Huckabee, it's either stay home or Huckabee all the way. Yeah, it gives you the food for thought. But I understand what Susan's saying about, you know, getting out of the country if that kind of thing comes up, because I don't know if America could recover from a Huckabee presidency. I mean, the fact of the matter is we're liable to be 50 years recovering from the Bush presidency. And here I am in the hills of West Virginia and got my back up and don't feel like running away from a fight. But sometimes Belize looks awfully damn good. But under the circumstances as they exist, I guess we're pretty well trapped. This is The Horn. We'll be back.
We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out because I love you too much, baby. Why can't you see what you do?
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do?
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Tune in to Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Thanks for lending an ear.
This is the story about a group of kids who volunteered.
We fixed stuff. Did some art projects with the kids.
Cleaned up the park.
We worked in the woods.
I just wanted to do something.
We fixed up his house.
Did something for the planet.
Hey, that was all I needed.
And you know what? It was great.
It was a blast.
At first, they didn't know each other.
I didn't know anyone.
Well, that didn't last long.
This guy is really funny.
Me?
These are my new friends. These are really good new friends.
Are you into it?
Are You Into It is a volunteer program for kids like you who care. If you want to make a difference in your community and make friends, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH or check out our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
This definitely made a difference.
I feel like I can do everything now.
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're Head On with Bob Kincaid.
Okie dokie, you know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877 the numeral 4, Head On. That's toll free if you need us to carry the freight for you. If you've got your own long distance unlimited calling plan, it's 304-658-5453. You are welcome to use either method to reach the program. Love to hear from new callers, old friends. That's what conversation radio is all about, brothers and sisters. You can email to Bob at headonradio.com as well. You're welcome to jump into the no-charge, no-fee, headonradionetwork.com chat room as well. Lots happening there. It's a fun place to experience the full multimedia panoply that is, in fact, the horn. So, you know, all of that. Learn it, know it, use it. 13 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock here in the Eastern Standard Time Zone. And before we go back to the phones, I want to share one thing with it. Apparently, the business about making the Constitution conform to God's law that radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckstaby said in, what was it, Warren, Michigan, has been getting a little bit of traction. The Huckster showed up, radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckstaby showed up last night on the Hannity and Combs Blabfest, right-wing POS, and Alan Combs, the doormat for Sean Hannity, tried to ask him about it, and the radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee had this to say in response. Here we go. Anytime now.
They want results. They don't want people to just talk about it. But somebody who's actually done it.
Governor, you made a statement at a rally in Michigan within the last 24 hours. You said, I have opponents in this race who do not want to change the Constitution. You said, I believe it's a lot easier to change the Constitution than it would be to change the word of the living God, and that's what we need to do. That makes people a little worried. It sounds like you're looking to have a theocratic state when you make statements like that, talking about changing the Constitution and keeping with your view of God.
On two things. The context is two things. Human Life Amendment, which I support and which has been in the Republican platform since 1980. And by the way, Fred Thompson doesn't support it, nor does John McCain. And yet it's part of our platform. And it's a very important part of our platform to say that human life is something we're going to stand for. And the second thing is traditional marriage. So those are the two areas in which I'm talking about. I'm not suggesting that we rewrite the Constitution to reflect tithing or Sunday school attendance. I want to make that very clear.
Fred Thompson won the show just a few moments ago.
Except for you, Alan. I think maybe you should obey those things.
Well, thank you for the suggestion. Fred Thompson on this program just a few moments ago said he was the only real conservative in the race and went after you on the issue of taxes and what you did in Arkansas. He said he's the only conservative.
Well, yeah, okay. Thanks, Mike. Trying to calm down the less religiously insane sector of the Republican voting base. Oh, I'm not going to make you go to Sunday school or nothing, or tithe. No. Telling American women what they can do with their own insides is plenty there, radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huxterby. That's plenty. As well as getting the federal government. Whatever happened to getting the federal government off our back? You know, every time these pig-licking freaks have a debate, they try to conjure up the shade of Ronnie Reagan, that hateful old warmongering criminal. And in so doing, they conjure all the crap that he said. Things like, I want to get government. The government is the problem, not the answer. I want to get government off your back. Ketchup is a vegetable. Mommy! And then, how is getting the federal government in the marriage business, how is that even remotely getting government off our backs, Reverend Huckabee? See, even so-called liberal Alan Colmes can't be bothered to call him Reverend Huckabee instead. Oh, Jesus. Got an email in from our buddy Jeb. He says, names are important. Right to work means right to work for less. Yeah. Steel, Nitro, Spike are not names to use in a political campaign, and neither is Mitt. His name is Willard. These bastards call me a Democrat Party member, not a Democratic Party member. I call them publicans. Look it up. Please call this holy underwear person by his correct name, Willard. Yeah, we call him Willard all the time. Maybe it'll remind people of the book and movie about what he is, a rat. That's where it took me, first time I realized his real name was Willard. Thanks, Jeb. Appreciate it. And to the phones.
Hey.
Hey, Juanita, how are you?
I'm pretty good. I've been laughing my head off.
Oh, really?
Between you and Guy. Guy and his Republican love and you and all your possums.
Republican love? Oh, my. Oh, God, yeah. That was, yeah, I giggled a little bit myself.
I like that guy's explanation of Mormonism. No, I totally agree with Susan. This, to me, he is the most dangerous one. I think they're all dangerous, but I think Huckabee is the most dangerous. Say it, and I'm sure you know what I'm talking about, because we've lived close around all this stuff, you know, this phony religion. And it reminds me a lot of when Kennedy was running, what they were accusing him of trying to do, and it was the Southern Baptists, too, mainly.
Yeah, that's why he went to Houston to make that speech. He went to the belly of the beast.
And I said, you know, I've heard about the Catholics, you know, how cruel they were when they had reign over countries. And I said, any church that got a chance would take over a country. It didn't matter what the denomination was, because of the people that misinterpret what church is supposed to be.
Every time a church has had an opportunity to take over a country, it has. And
I think any of them would if they had a chance to. Any of them. And I agree with Susan. I think he's the most dangerous.
Well, he is. I'm glad you recognize that, Juanita, because that means there's one more person out there who can tell others. He is dangerous.
And I realize that I haven't really discussed a lot with some of my, right-wing friends, but I think they'll say, oh, he's wonderful. He's going to do this and that and the other for our country. We're going to be a wonderful country. And they wouldn't want the Mormons to take over. They wouldn't want the Catholics to take over. They certainly don't want the Muslims to take over.
No, and in fact, Mike Huckabee has, as one of his advisors, a guy who has said that the smart thing to do would be to post a cop outside every mosque just to keep an eye on those crazy Muslims.
Yeah. I haven't seen her in a while, but I have this real good friend who was from Iraq. They had, when the Khomeini took over, they ran the Shah off, and they were living there, and she's of the Bahayan faith. They're very peace-loving. And this Khomeini, he was taking them out and hanging them, men and women. And they had to leave over there. That's how they came over to this country. And I just think I would love to see her again and talk to her. And I don't know. People are good people, no matter what country they're from or whatever. It's according to the person. And it just breaks my heart, that I guess I'm rambling about. I'm not making any sense.
No, you're making plenty of sense. Go right ahead.
My friend, now she'll go to a doctor and she'll say, well, I don't think they were Christian. I think they were probably one of them Muslims, And I said, was he a good doctor? I said, I've had so-called Christian doctors that I wouldn't want to throw a stick at. I want somebody that's a good doctor. That's got nothing to do with their religion. If they're atheist or whatever, But anyway, I think this is very dangerous. I think this guy's very, very, and I think he's a lot slicker than people really know. I think he's got a lot going on under the scenes. And another thing, when you were talking about him cooking the squirrel.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I wonder how he killed it, knowing how his son.
Well, angels took the bullet to the squirrel.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
Every bullet that comes out of a radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee's gun is whisked to its target by an angel of God.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't blame me. He said it. I didn't.
I know he said it. He said there's going to be hunting in heaven, too. I ain't going to that heaven.
What are they going to hunt? Jews.
Right. Right. It says the lamb and the lion shall lie down with one another.
But that's only till the lamb nods off, and then all bets are off, Juanita.
Especially if it's But it really, I don't know, it really is something else to think about. And he probably would say, yeah, go ahead, kill all the...
If I had a little bit more time, that's a country song title, Juanita, Hunting in Heaven.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I can almost hear the melody. I would sing I'll do it. Will there be hunting in heaven?
Yes, sir.
Double-barreled shotguns with God. See, we're on the way. We're on the way. I'll give you a writing credit.
Okay. I'll have to sing my little sushi song sometime.
Oh, you absolutely will. I love the sushi song. See, I get a writing credit on that.
Okay.
Okay.
But anyway, what was funny about that guy about the, what's wrong with men having more than one wife, They don't like sex anyway. They get tired.
You know, I echo the profound words of the cab driver that we had in Washington D.C. a year and a half ago, Wayne and I, and he was a Sikh,
he was what?
He was a Sikh, S-I-K-H. He was of the
Sikh
faith.
Oh yeah, yeah. I have a doctor.
And yeah. He said, "I do not want more than one wife. For the most part, one is sometimes more than I can stand." and then proceeded to tell us all of it. You love a cab driver who can carry on a conversation, you know, and begins to just tell us all that we ever wanted to know. Oh, it was precious. I do not understand them wanting to have four wives. The best part of it though was his cell phone rang in the middle of it, and you hear him and he looks down, he sees the number, he flips the thing open while he's driving and goes, "Yes, dear."
Yeah. Well, I had a Sikh doctor when 9/11 happened.
I love the Sikhs. They're wonderful people.
I hadn't been going to them very long, but I thought they were Muslims, but they're not.
Oh, no, they're really, really seriously not.
But they killed here in Florida after 9/11. You know, they killed. This doctor was threatened.
Yeah, because, you know, we're so on the ball.
Oh, yeah.
Sikh, is that some kind of Baptist sect? You know how it goes, Juanita.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I remember. I think it was Arizona where another Sikh man was beaten to death shortly after September the 11th.
Yeah.
But you know that's been the entire history of our response to September the 11th. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't care who it is. I just want to kill somebody. It makes me feel better if I just kill somebody.
You were talking the other day about not cutting the hair, wasn't it you?
Yeah, that was me.
And you know they don't cut their hair. The men don't.
Well, they couldn't go to high school in Kearns, Texas, that's for sure.
Huh?
They couldn't go to school in Kearns, Texas, that's for sure.
Well, that was one thing he told me. He said, now, I'm a little older, so I don't have as much hair. My hair's not as thick, but he said it's never been cut. You know, the big old turban on. And, of course, when I was a kid and I saw those guys wearing turbans, you know, in those so-called Arabian Night movies, you know, I thought that was very exciting. But, ain't that a coincidence that you and I haven't run-ins with? Yeah, he was a great guy.
Oh, they're good people. And most of the time when you see the turban, you're dealing with a Sikh. Because it's part of the holy headgear thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Juanita, you have yourself a wonderful evening. Keep laughing.
Well, tomorrow morning is my debut.
Oh, my goodness. You must
hear it.
You must let us know how it goes. Make sure they get the good side.
I hope it.
And remember, you want a little extra makeup for that, Juanita, because you know when the lights are brighter, it makes you pale.
Well, I'm pale already. I live in Florida and I'm pale.
Well, that means you're ahead of the curve. That's one less visit to the dermatologist. All right, you take care, Juanita.
Okay, you too.
Bye now.
Night-night.
Juanita has her big debut on public access TV tomorrow when she takes her petition before the county commission. As we say in the biz, Juanita, break a leg. That's a good thing, by the way. Hi, who have I got?
It's Cossack.
Hey, Coss, what's up?
About to lose my mind, basically.
Well, you know, of all the things I've lost, I miss my mind the most.
Yeah, it's like, do you remember, if this goes on, or Revolt in 2100?
Okay, Revolt in 2100 strikes a chord, but I think it's on a brain cell that I killed.
Robert Heinlein.
Yeah.
Nehemiah Scudder, the first prophet.
Okay.
The state of the theocracy.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
that was kind of the backstory, the untold backstory of Stranger in a Strange Land.
Oh, sort of the origin of the Fosterites, or
correct. It was the first iteration, so to speak. That came out in 1940.
And then he sort of refined it into the Church of the New Revelation and the Fosterites in Stranger in a Strange Land, right?
Correct.
And, I always read, the Fosterites, forgive me, but the Fosterites always reminded me of the Mormons.
That's because he was living in a Mormon near a Mormon commune at the time. He didn't like them either.
Well, that puts him in good company because Mark Twain wouldn't cross the street.
Oh, God. Unbelievable. Where do they find these people?
Under rocks. I guess it's prayer meeting night, so we can do this, but who were the gullible souls who bought into Joseph Smith the first time out? I mean, the guy had a reputation in his community for tall tales and making stuff up.
Well, considering you dig up two golden tablets in your backyard that...
And then you put the bowling ball in the hat so you can see through the bowling ball and read the... Yeah, I know.
Yeah. I mean, good God.
But to be fair, how much crazier is that, Cossack, than believing... That a guy got hung on a cross, died, and got up from the dead and hung out for 6 weeks or something, or believing that eating a cracker turns into meat in your tummy, or that believing that drinking wine turns into blood in your tummy. How much crazier is reading golden tablets through your hat and a bowling ball than that?
Not much.
How much crazier is it than believing that the Earth was created in 6 days by some sky god who bears a very close resemblance to the Zeus?
True.
And I've been doing a lot of reading. You know what a penchant, okay, that's the French moment of the program, that I have for ancient history and stuff. I've been doing a lot of reading about Alexander lately. Do you realize that, this just dawned on me. Do you realize that Jesus is a Hellenized, radical Jewish Alexander? How old was Alexander when he did it?
33.
How old was Jesus?
33.
Alexander conquered the known world. Christianity has...
conquered the known world.
Alexander was known for being kind to his enemies. Jesus was known for
being kind to his enemies. Yeah, there's a certain overlap there.
And Apollo takes on the aspect of Alexander in subsequent art, and Jesus takes on the aspect of Apollo in his subsequent art.
Correct.
I just saw that and went, "Whoa! Never thought about that one before." I love it when I have an original thought. Or at least what to me is original.
Well, that's a good point. Good point. And unfortunately, you are correct. The knuckle draggers up here in Northwest Florida, about 99% of them will be falling all over themselves to pull the lever for Huxterby. Because he's a good God-believing man.
Yeah. And let's see, give me some geography help there, Cossack. North Florida, I mean, would that extend down as far as, say, Orlando? I mean, where are the knuckle draggers and the mouth breathers and the fundamentalists concentrated? How far do they extend? I can't imagine that there's a lot of mouth breathers and knuckle walking fundamentalists in, say, South Beach.
No, but, primarily, a little east of Tallahassee, all the way over to the Alabama line. And, I mean, you know what they call this part of Florida, right?
Redneck Riviera?
Well, they call it L.A.
Yeah.
Lower Alabama.
Well, yeah, I mean, we always called Lower Alabama, but I didn't know that extended into Florida.
Oh, yeah. This is Lower Alabama.
I think very fondly back to the nights that I've spent in the Florabama Lounge there on the Florida-Alabama line. Big fun to be had there, the mullet toss and so forth. But yeah, it's very much not the Florida that the people who fly, the snowbirds who fly down from up north are thinking about. That's no.
No, they're trying to make it look like Daytona Beach and all that. I mean, you can't even see the Gulf anymore from the road because of all the condos. I mean, there is no public access anymore. You have to go through private property to get there. And even though it's the...
Well, you're lucky that you've got beach at all, because what happened over on the Alabama Gulf Coast, along about Gulf Shores and so forth, is all of that development created basically a seawall so that the sea couldn't deposit the sands on the shore. And where, you know, when the hotels and condos were first built, you know, the beach went out, you know, a 100 yards or so. Now it's now the Gulf of Mexico laps at the edge of the hotel.
Exactly. Well, that's basically what's happening here. And the next time we get a another 5 rated hurricane through here, a lot of those condos are going to end up in the Gulf.
Yeah, on
it's going to be amusing.
And you know, what a pity. The one nice thing about the Alabama area is that you've got Gulf State Park there, and it's been, I guess it's been rebuilt, but it was built in such a way that you still had the sea oats and the sea grass, and you had meaningful beachfront, because they didn't build 90-story condominiums.
Unfortunately, not around here. I mean, the as you can guess, the zoning board has been bought out by the builders and contractors. I mean, everything that actually looked like indigenous building is gone. It's ridiculous. And people are complaining, why isn't this like it was when I came here? Because you allowed these idiots to...
Yeah, the short answer, because of you.
Exactly.
It's a self-inflicted wound.
Yeah. And, oh, yeah. Have you read Common Dreams today?
No, I haven't.
I suggest that you pop over there when you have a chance. They tell just how the false Straits of Hormuz story was peddled by the Navy.
And, well, give us the Reader's Digest condensed version, Cossack.
Basically, that these idiots peddle this increasingly dramatic version of a normal meeting in the Straits of Hormuz and building it into a Gulf of Tonkin incident.
Well, the comparison with the Gulf of Tonkin was immediately apparent, but at some point somebody just hit the record button on the computer and took in some of this babbling dude, some of his audio, and then whipped it together with a piece of videotape. Is that how it shakes out?
Yeah. Well, here's the first sentence. Senior Pentagon officials, evidently reflecting a broader administration policy decision, used an off-the-record Pentagon briefing to turn the January 6th U.S. uranium incident in the Strait of Hormuz into a sensational story demonstrating Iran's military aggressiveness. A reconstruction of the events has shown.
Nice. But, you know, why are we not... Is anyone surprised?
Doesn't surprise me. I mean, we're trying real hard. They're, like I said, they're practicing their landing exercises out here.
Disgusting.
So, I mean, it's in high gear.
Well, you're not too awful far from the... from Pensacola NAS, are you?
No, but I'm right next to Tyndall.
Oh, wow. Okay, so are you saying that you're seeing heightened levels of activity?
Oh, yeah. Both the air, and there's the Naval Support Station, and they're running their landing craft overtime.
Brother.
Landing exercises.
Well, look, I had the quote from the Newsweek article quoting the guy from the Israeli newspaper article about what George Bush said regarding the NIE, Cossack. And, you know, I mean, what did he say? Well, I can't control what the intelligence community publishes, but that's not the way I believe.
Exactly.
Faith-based foreign policy. Here, let's go back to tonight's theme. We're screwed.
Yeah.
I mean, you started the phone call by saying, you know, on the verge of what, losing your mind?
Something like that.
It's not, don't feel privileged or anything, Cossack. That's the normal response, my friend. If you didn't feel like you were losing your mind in this little Hall of Mirrors funhouse, there would be something desperately wrong with you.
But then again, with a mind as small as mine, it's rather easy to lose track of. So.
Well, and but that's only because all the life has gotten sucked out of it over the last 8 years with all the impossible crap that you've been asked to swallow.
Oh yeah.
You know, I read a story today, and I. Immediately, it was provided to me by our good friend Texas Betsy, our blogger, that said White House claims emails erased.
Oh yeah. They
and it was one of those moments where you stub your toe because you just, you know, whack right into the side of the. Well, damn it! All the emails from around the time that they were ginning up the war, they now claim, we reused that digital computer tape, and they're just gone now. Yeah, I shipped it off to Peter, and I said, is this for real? And he writes back and says, bastards, yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. They suddenly got very environmentally conscious and decided to recycle their tapes.
Even though it was a felony to do so. Let's not forget that little fun detail.
Yeah. I mean, you don't, you know, standard good practice, especially if you're archiving important things, you never, never, never do that. Never. It's just not done.
Well, they'll probably tell us that the Clintons took away all of their magnetic tapes, so they had to, you know, reuse. That's what it was, that the Clintons' fault.
It was the Clintons who set up the record-keeping requirements.
Yeah, I know. You know. We know. We also know it's a felony to destroy that stuff. But, you know, impeachment's off the table, and it's all sunshine and violets in Nancy Pelosi's world. So, you know, why bother?
And you heard about Mike McConnell, right?
Yeah, I did. And
you know, there's an absolute necessity to be able to access everybody's every email, every conversation, every browsing.
Well, if they would just catch the guy who keeps offering to offering to make, you know, certain parts of me bigger and do something with him, I might be able to support that level of scrutiny of the American people. But that's the thing. They're out there, they're trying to get the corn pone recipe while they're letting the guy selling the bogus Viagra go. I mean, can I at least get a benefit out of this?
No, you get more of it, actually. Because he's paying them off, obviously.
So, well, you know, we're in a place, Cossack, where any way that you turn, you're confronted by sleaze, you're confronted by insanity, you're confronted by overt bloodthirsty violence, and people feel like they have no way of hiding from it. So, you know, in a way, I don't blame the people who would just as soon turn on entertainment television and find out about Britney Spears' miserable life, because they can say, well, you know, she's a multimillionaire, but her life is worse than mine.
Well, at least, you know, with Britney Spears, you get a chance to look at her cooter, you know.
Oh! you're going to get me in trouble with the ladies who listen to the program. He said it. I didn't, okay? It was all him. I wasn't setting that up. It reminds me of Jack Benny. Now stop that.
Rochester?
Hey, Cossack, you have a great evening, all right?
All right, you too, Bob.
Take care.
Take care.
Bye now. In North Florida, and knowing from whence he speaks, our good friend Cossack. Oh, but you know what? We're nowhere near to being done with tonight's prayer meeting edition, because I've got a hair raiser for you, and we're going to do it right now. We're going to go right there. Because we can. in the midst of radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee's plea to make the Constitution conform to God's standards, I bring you this article by Chris Hedges from The Nation, founded at Alternet. Headline: Now the Theocrats Want American Religious History Week. Yeah. Shadu. And I'm just going to read, because any artifice that I might attach to this story would do it a level of injustice. Chris Hedges writes, "Here's an event I have no intention of honoring: American Religious History Week." Circle it on your calendar. Oh, see, I'm already doing it. It's almost irresistible for me. American Religious History Week. Okay, it's not official yet, Hedges writes, but it is spelled out as Resolution 888. Why it couldn't be Resolution 666, I don't know, but, well, sure we do. See, I did it again. You see how hard it is for me? It is spelled out as Resolution 888 in the bowels of a House committee sponsored by Republican Congressman Randy Forbes and backed by 31 other representatives. This is, Hedges says, an insidious attempt by the radical Christian right. Got to do something with that Christian word. They're not Christians. They're just not. There's nothing Christian about them. Their obsession is with the Old Testament, for starters. And what Christianity they pull out has nothing to do with Yeshua the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter, and it's all Pauline garbage. See, I'm going to turn it off and go away if I can't just do the damn story. Roses are red, violets are blue. I'm schizophrenic, and so am I. Yeah. Oh! This is an insidious attempt by the radical Christian right to rewrite American history, to turn the founding fathers from deists into Christian fundamentalists, to proclaim us officially to be a Christian nation. If you want to know why Mike Huckabee is dangerous, why his brand of right-wing Christian populism is so frightening, you should read this resolution. It has passages like this. Quote, "Whereas political scientists have documented that the most frequently cited source in the political period known as the founding era was the Bible, and whereas the United States Supreme Court has declared throughout the course of our nation's history that the United States is a Christian country, a Christian nation, a Christian people, a religious people whose institutions presuppose a supreme being, and that we cannot read into the Bill of Rights a philosophy of hostility to religion, ... The resolution is staggering for its sheer volume of falsehoods about our history, our system of government, and our democracy. It asserts that Thomas Jefferson, quote, urged local governments to make land available specifically for Christian purposes, provided federal funding for missionary work among the Indian tribes, and declared that religious schools would receive the patronage of the government. House Resolution 888 has, get this, 76 preambular phrases just like the ones I just read. And then it has four resolution clauses. The third resolution clause that says that the House of Representatives, quote, rejects in the strongest possible terms any effort to remove, obscure, or purposely omit such history from our nation's public buildings and educational resources. Our good friend Mikey Weinstein, who's been on the program, he of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, militaryreligiousfreedom.org, told Chris Hedges, quote, Resolution 888 is perhaps the most disgraceful, shocking, and tragic example yet of the pernicious and pervasive pattern and practice of the unconstitutional rape of our bedrock American citizens' religious freedoms by the fundamentalist Christian right. Now, please remember, when we talk about Mikey Weinstein is not some freak, radical, commie, pinko, anarchist liberal. Mikey Weinstein is a former White House counsel to Ronnie Reagan. No duh. Now, the upside is that American Religious History Week may never get out of committee. But its sponsor, Randy Forbes, and the 31 other repiglickens and fundamentalist Democrats, if there are any signed on to it, will use it as a campaign point. Why won't the Democrats sign on to a basic resolution that reflects our wholesome, upstanding, family value-valuing Christian heritage? Why won't they do that? It's because they're Democrats and they hate the baby Jesus. See, I editorialized again. I'm sorry. Hedges says the resolution underlies the ideological appeal of the Huckabee campaign. However adroitly the Republican candidate dodges these issues when speaking to the general public. Huckabee told a Baptist convention back in 1998, quote, I hope we answer the alarm clock and take this nation back for Christ. And told the crowd that he hadn't entered politics, quote, because I thought government had a better answer. I got into politics because I knew government didn't have the real answers, brothers and sisters. That the real answers lie in accepting Jesus Christ into our lives. Talk a lot about waking up in the middle of the night in a cold sweat with the little beads running down from my hairline. An America headed by Mike Huckabee and those who have found their way to the Congress to rewrite American history. Rewrite it. Change it. Wholesale. Never mind the fact that Thomas Jefferson rewrote the Bible and took out all the magical BS. Never mind that. Never mind that Thomas Jefferson had an innate loathing for organized religion. Never mind that, too. Never mind the fact that John Adams was a Unitarian, for heaven's sakes. Forget it. It's all just been wiped clean, and history changed by the whim of a handful of elected so-called representatives. Does that put you into a sweat? It does me. Does it make you want to run away? It does me. You know, look at the stuff that a President Huckabee would be handed to work with. Beginning on Thursday, January the 31st, citizens of both Canada and the United States will have to present proof of citizenship and a government-issued ID when entering the United States at land border crossings and seaports. That means if you drive into Canada and drive back, you cannot return to your native soil without proof of citizenship and a government-issued ID. Oh, no, 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 no. That's not a birth certificate or your driver's license. A passport or a new form of border card, citizen, now under development, will fulfill the requirements. But you can't just look at the border crossing guard and say, I'm an American. God bless the Super Bowl. God bless George Washington. God bless my mother. What kind of Al-Qaeda terrorist would say such a thing? And drive on through. You can't do it anymore. The power to torture, the power to eavesdrop, the power to wiretap, the power to read your mail, your email, your browsing habits. All of that would be dropped in the lap of radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee. And for those of you who think I'm spending too much time talking about this monster, tell me that on January 21st, 2009, on the first day of his presidency. Because I submit to you again, he would beat Barack Obama and he would beat Hillary Clinton. Never mind what national poll numbers say right now. Because the combined weight of the Republican Party hasn't gotten behind him yet, or any nominee. Whoever the nominee is will have the juggernaut force of every last ounce of hate in the Republican Party behind him. And they will hammer unceasingly. And Obama or Hillary Clinton would lose to him. No, I don't have statistics. No, I don't have polling data. I have a fairly useful, fairly perspicacious group of settlings between my ears that occasionally pass for a brain and a mind. And that mind tells me, not as a function of faith and not as a function of belief, but as a function of analysis of the situation as it stands and as it will likely stand in November 2008, that we run a profound risk, and a risk that I wish would just go the hell away, of having a president Huckabee. You know damn good and well that there's a lot of strong likelihood in what I say. Our good friend Eugene Finnerman over at FinnermanWorks.com, your RDA of irony, sat down and, poor fella, watched the Democratic so-called debate last night. And today he authored a post called Political Medley. Act 1, the Democratic debate. If out of desperation you watched last night's debate among the Democratic candidates, you may have noticed a slight bias on the part of NBC Media. Brian Williams joining us tonight will be Senator Barack Obama, former Senator John Edwards, and because Margaret Hamilton is unavailable, mean old Mrs. Clinton. Tim Russert will join me in the questions. I will start. Senator Barack, what if I told you Senator Clinton has compared you to Butterfly McQueen? Senator Obama. Well, I'm too thin to be Hattie McDaniel, and in today's America, I can dream of being Rhett Butler. Tim Russert. Senator Clinton, how do you expect us to believe that you wouldn't have said that? Senator Clinton, you're just trying to make me cry again. Russert. And would you cry if I told you that Chelsea was just murdered? Senator Clinton, I don't believe you. It's not a sweeps month. Brian Williams. Senator Edwards, did you know that Michelle Obama and Bill Clinton are having an affair? Act 3, President God. Well, wait, Act 2, Willard Romney wins something. putting together a coalition of golfers for Eisenhower and Gilbert and Sullivan amateur societies. Willard Romney won the Michigan primary. It was noted that the ballot had been changed, asking Republican voters their choice for Scoutmaster, but Romney nonetheless won. In his victory speech, Mr. Romney offered his vision of America. I'll bring us back to the days when we used more oil in our hair than in our cars. And a great America is a clean America, so no more naughty words. Let's limit our vocabulary to what you would have heard on Leave It to Beaver. Act 3, President God. Governor Mike Huckabee. See, even Eugene does it. Hey, Eugene, memo. Radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee, okay? Get with the program. Huckabee announced his intention to replace the Constitution with the Bible. He regretted the necessity of stoning anyone for adultery or eating pork, but the law required it. Huckabee also mentioned that slavery would again be permissible, but only 6 days of the week. Under President Huckabee, Protestantism would not be compulsory. Catholics and Jews would just be registered as idolaters. Muslims, however, would have to be slaughtered. Although his political platform might seem horrifying, Mr. Huckabee announced it in such a folksy, engaging manner that no one seemed to mind. Mighty cold here in West by God, Virginia right now. And the thought of, I don't know, the thought of somewhere warmer that isn't America somehow seems strangely appealing. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice, America's listener-supported Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. We'll be back. I'm Bob Kincaid.
banana republics. Things aren't as warm as they seem. None of the natives are buying any secondhand American dream. Late at night you will find them in the cheap hotels and bars, hustling the senorita while they dance beneath the stars. Spending the renegade peso on a bottle of rum and a lime. Singing, give me some words I can dance. Down to the banana republic, down to the tropical sun. Though the expatriated American open to find some fun.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Armed with a Presidential Emergency Board recommendation that Amtrak essentially agree to the union's position, bargaining resumed Wednesday between Amtrak and several unions. Because Amtrak took a take-it-or-leave-it stance, refusing to bargain in good faith, workers have gone 8 years without a new contract agreement. If they can't agree to a contract, there could be a nationwide Amtrak strike January 30th. Don Griffin is Director of Strategic Coordination and Research for the Teamsters Brotherhood of Maintenance and Way.
It would affect freight railroad. It would be a nationwide strike. It would have an impact on the freight railroads, and it would have a substantial effect on commuter operations from Boston to Washington, D.C. Look, the last thing we want to do is go on strike, have a strike. The members lose money. They lose benefits. The public is inconvenienced. What we wanted was a voluntary agreement. And we just were unable to get to the point where we had serious discussions with Amtrak.
The Presidential Emergency Board recommended a 35.2% retroactive wage increase for Amtrak workers, and the board rejected arbitrary work rules changes that Amtrak was insisting upon. One sticking point now, though, is that the unions want the back pay to go to all Amtrak workers who earned it, not just those currently on Amtrak's payroll. Bargaining between Amtrak and nine unions is scheduled to last at least through Friday.
The lawsuit brought by Nevada's teachers union questioning the legitimacy of casinos being used as caucus sites goes before a judge today. Jesse Russell reports.
In March of 2007, Democratic presidential campaign representatives and party officials met to determine how best to set up Nevada's caucus sites so they could accommodate the thousands of employees who work in downtown Las Vegas on Saturdays. The agreement allows for shift workers within 2.5 miles of the Vegas Strip to attend caucuses being held at casinos in the area. 2 days after the culinary workers endorsed Senator Barack Obama, and more than 9 months after the rules were agreed upon, the Nevada State Teachers Union filed a lawsuit questioning the legitimacy of the at-large voting precincts. The union argues that workers in other areas should be allowed the same right to vote at precincts near where they work, and that is an issue of fairness. The culinary workers have accused the NSEA of contesting the caucus locations because members of the Education Association leadership support Senator Hillary Clinton. The NSEA has not endorsed any candidate, although some of the union's top leaders have publicly endorsed Clinton. The Nevada caucus will be held this Saturday at noon.
The American Red Cross says a $200 million budget deficit means it must cut 1,000 jobs. The Red Cross is 126 years old and has had funding issues ever since the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks, when it set aside $200 million in donations for, quote, future terrorist attacks, end quote. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
About 50 minutes left in tonight's prayer meeting edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. You know that. You know how to get in touch with the program. Toll free, 877-443-2366. If you like spelling on your telephone keypad, that's 877, the numeral 4, followed by H-E-A-D-O-N, Head On. For those of you with unlimited long-distance calling plans, 304-658-5453. Conversation radio is about what you and I say to each other, not about what I babble on at length by myself about. Of course, you know that. An email comes into bob@headonradio.com. We go now this prayer meeting Wednesday to beautiful, beautiful Atlanta, Georgia, my former home once upon a time, back when dinosaurs roamed the earth. And I was a Cub anchor for the CNN radio network. Headline: Archbishop Earl Polk pleads guilty. 80-year-old leader of a suburban Atlanta megachurch pled guilty today to a charge that he lied under oath. Really? A preacher lying? Well, one down, lots to go. What did he lie about, though? Oh, sunshine. He lied. He lied when he said in a deposition in 2006 surrounding a law related to a lawsuit in which he was accused of coercing a woman into a sexual relationship. He lied when he said, work with me here, that the only woman he had ever had sex with outside of his marriage was a Ms. Brewer. Mona Brewer. That's the church employee he was accused of. You know how it is with preachers when they get caught in the secretary's drawers. He also manipulated her into the affair from 1989 to 2003. Wow. By telling her the affair was her only path to salvation. I've never tried that one. You know, you're in the sort of bar of last resort in college at 3 o'clock in the morning. Hey, baby, let's go to my place. I'll get you saved. Yeah. No, I don't have that kind of brass, but apparently Earl Polk did. But he said that the only sexual relationship he ever had outside marriage was with Mona Brewer. Well, that's not quite true, because it turns out that he's the biological dad of his brother's son, D.E. Polk, which means that he had, you know, the nasty with his brother's wife. What did I tell you about these fundamentalists and their fascination? Because, you know, Onan received the curse of God because he spilled his seed on the ground instead of going and doing his brother's wife. He's just following the commandments of God. Really. So, you know, it's a start. What do you want? It's something, you know, it's a place from which we can begin to work. Holy mackerel. Meanwhile, on matters religious, the low point, if you were paying attention or watching, which you should, why would you have been when you could have been listening to Strictly Confidential with the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio host, Peter Godbold, last night at 9 p.m. Eastern, which comes your way at 9 p.m. Eastern again this evening, I should add. But if by some sad, sick chance you were watching the MSNBC, it wasn't a debate. None of these are. Beauty contest? Pageant. There we go. The MSNBC Democratic pageant. There were plenty of low points. Like I said, Brian Williams' first three questions were about race. Tim Russert, Timmy! His first five questions were about race. But just when you think they've gone as low as they can go, they open the little trap door and show you that there's another sub-basement, and we're going in it. This question from Brian Williams, you know, just take the journalism credentials, put them in an envelope, and mail them back to the Draw Spunky School of Journalism where you got them, okay, Brian? This question. Senator Obama, a fresh question here. Sorry, sometimes I can't keep it in. Senator Obama, a fresh question here. It may not come as news to you that there's a lot of false information about you circulating on the internet. We received one email in particular. Really? The one from Nigeria, Brian, or the one that says your schlong isn't long enough? No, different one. We received one email in particular. This particular one alleges, among other things, that you are trying to hide the fact that you're a Muslim, that you took the oath of office on the Quran and not the Bible, and that you will not pledge allegiance to the flag or generally respect it. How does your campaign go on about combating this kind of thing? Don't! See, if there had been a real question at the end, you know, are you a Muslim? Do you go home and spit on the Bible? Do you eat babies? It's at least a question that you can... How does your campaign... You see, that question, though, how does your campaign go on about combating this kind of thing? That's weasel journalism. That's weaselism. Pure and simple. The weasels with, you know, the steno pads are down to the point that they're repeating internet libels and framing them as questions to presidential candidates on the Democratic side. Now, let me draw a distinction. Mr. Huckabee, you said the other day in Warren, Michigan, that you wanted to make the Constitution conform to God's standards. Which God and which standards? That's journalism. That's real. It'll never get asked. Not in a pageant. But this, you know, where you're repeating something that can't even remotely pass muster at Snopes, for the love of God. You know, this is the lawyer standing in front of the witness on the stand saying, "Sir, when did you stop having sex with farm animals?" And the other lawyer jumps up and says, "Your Honor, I object." And the wily lawyer asking the question says, "Withdrawn." And it's all said in front of the jury. And the bell has been rung and you can't unring a bell. And the American people never hear the answer. They, you know, Emery looks at Eileen and says, "Honey, I didn't know he was a Muslim, did you?" "No, dear." "And he swore an oath on the Koran?" "We can't vote for no Muslim because they ain't Christian like we are." And, you know, there's Mike, the radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee standing over in the corner going, "I am! I'm a Christian! I want to make the Constitution conform to God's laws, standards! Vote for me! Not the guy who took the oath on the Quran!" And boom. It's not even an urban myth anymore. It's not even spam anymore. I fully expect to see Brian Williams ask John Edwards at the next pageant, "Well, sir, we received an email that had been addressed to you saying that your Johnson was not long enough." How does your campaign go on about combating this kind of thing? Sons of bitches. Self-made. It's stunning. It is truly and honest to God stunning. I've almost lost the ability to be shocked anymore, or lost the ability to comprehend the difference between fact and fiction in some ways. Got an email here, says, have you heard? Have you heard Toby Keith's latest hit? If you're brown, you're going down. It's a real knee slapper. And I'm sitting here going, oh, Jesus, tell me. Please tell me that's not a real... Please, because I don't know anymore. I don't know. And it ain't funny. I ran this last night on the horn section, and it certainly bears repetition. Flush Flemball, he who has made a career in the last year out of playing that little parody song by the guy that does all of his parody songs. I forget what the turd's name is. Shanklin, Paul Shanklin. Barack the Magic Negro, he's been running that for a year now. Well, he is a witty one, that Flush Flemball. And this is what he has to say now, talking about Barack Obama. If you didn't hear the horn section, this is new to you, and you're gonna hate it. But we can't just bury our heads in the sand. You've got to. I don't know if there are ever any moderate listeners. Or God knows any... I get the hate emails from time to time, so I know they're conservative. This is what they stand for. This is Flush Flemball. $29 million a year, and the spokesman de facto for the right wing.
Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton, have you noticed? It's Obama versus the Clintons. Two against one. Obama campaigning against both of the Clintons. I wonder how well Mrs. Clinton would hold up if the shoe was on the other foot. That is, if she had to run against an ex-president and a senator. I think she'd cry and complain about the unfairness. For all of her BS about being a victim and piling on, Obama is holding his own against both of them, doing more than his share of the spade work.
Ding, 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 ding.
Maybe even gaining ground at the moment.
Repeat it again, just in case
we missed
it. Using
not only the spade, ladies and gentlemen, but when he finishes with the spade in the garden of corruption planted by the Clintons, he turns to the hoe. And so the spade work and his expertise using a hoe. He's faring well.
Are you speechless? Now, see, that's the third or fourth time I've heard it, and I'm still just sitting here dumbstruck. Because I know that if I was on terrestrial radio in Beckley, West Virginia, as I once was, I know that if I did some sort of innuendo double entendre like that, I would have been jobless the next day. If I did it in Charleston, West Virginia, as a liberal talker on terrestrial radio, I would have been jobless the next day. But Limbaugh did it in Beckley, and Limbaugh did it in Charleston, and Limbaugh did it all over this once great nation. And he gets $29 million a year for that kind of cheap, tawdry, sophomoric garbage. I'm sorry, cheap, tawdry, sophomoric, racist garbage. he used spade in relation to Barack Obama 3 times and hoe 2x. But of course, remember, please, that there is no such thing as bad publicity. And Limbaugh's numbers will get a little boost out of this, precisely because of, you know, people like me talking about it. But God, what are we going to do? Are we going to, do you just let that stuff go by, or is there a moral imperative to denounce it? Is silence acceptance? Yes, it is. It absolutely is. We are halfway through the month of January. We are halfway through the first month of 2008. And this is where we already are in our presidential politics. And I won't ever presume to speak for you, but I will damned well speak for myself, and I will most assuredly denounce it. I don't want a part of an America that thinks that's funny, that thinks crypto-racism is cute. I don't want to break bread with an American who feels that way. I don't want to stand in line at the post office with an American who feels that way. And in fact, I'll talk about this crap publicly so that maybe the chance of there being an American who feels that way near me becomes lessened. God. God. I mean, there was an on-air hissy back in the 70s when Carol O'Connor as Archie Bunker used that word. And now a $29 million a year junkie gets away with it under the guise of free speech. It's not free speech. That's hate speech. That's not even parody or satire. That's just plain old-fashioned, got the 100 threads per inch, white percale sheet and pillowcase set on sale at the Kmart and went to the Clavern meeting, racism. Why does Rush Limbaugh still have advertisers? That's not a rhetorical question. It is safe to say, because again, we have established the principle that silence is acceptance. And if silence is acceptance, then certainly how is it described? Free speech of a corporation in engaging in advertising on his program, that's not silence's acceptance. That is overt acceptance. That is straight up condemnation. And frankly, well, it is what it is, as the saying goes. And it would be worth your time to maybe go over to MediaMatters.org and find the list of Rush Limbaugh's advertisers so that you can understand that when you do business with any of those people, and it's, and I'm not necessarily talking about the vacuum cleaner that'll suck up a bowling ball or the Swedish mattresses or the herbal baldness cures or the patent erection, the same stuff they hustle on the spam that I get in the internets all the time in the email. Not necessarily talking about that. There's other people. General Steel Buildings advertised with him for a long time. May still be. I don't listen to the man's program, so I don't know. But advertisers come and go, and they damn sure need to know that you won't be doing business with them. And I'll find out if I have to sit and listen and find out what the local availabilities are versus what the network availabilities are. I will let people know, because, again, your silence is your acceptance, and so is mine. But it's not just Flush Flimball. It's not just the oxymoron, the hillbilly heroin hero. No, this extends. You know, a week or so ago, there was some question as to whether Glenn Beck had had a road to Damascus moment by virtue of some sort of badass surgical experience he had. It turned out he was having internal hemorrhoids fixed, and that maybe that would change him. Well, it didn't. He went on to use his experience in a private hospital with private for-profit insurance coverage to blame the government for his problems. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the personal responsibility people always got to have somebody to blame. And then yesterday, on his syndicated radio program, for which Glenn Beck is also paid millions of dollars, Glenn Beck decided that attacking the living isn't enough. No, he went after someone really that I think you've got to be certifiably insane to go after. Check it out.
To tell you, I said on my radio show today, I'm beginning to come to a place where I love my grandfather, but I just want to slap him across the face for liking FDR. I think that was one evil son of a bitch.
Well, he certainly left us the bills, no doubt
he
about
sure
it.
He sure did.
Really? He left you the bills? Now, this is, I'll have to let it roll for a minute to find out. This is cretin from the Wall Street Journal.
And he was the first one to go in and say, hey, let's nationalize health care and energy and everything else, yeah, and made this depression go on and on and on for a decade.
And he was the one, Glenn, who was the first president in history who said, you know, deficits are good.
Yeah.
Yeah, Stephen Moore from the Wall Street Journal. You heard that. FDR invented the deficit. FDR wasn't dealing with a depression. He wasn't dealing with it's kind of like what I said about Carter earlier in the program. Jimmy Carter inherited the inflation that he was dealing with from Gerald Ford, who inherited it from Richard Nixon. But you'll never hear a right-winger admit that. None of these talking, these blathermouths, none of these gas bags on the right wing who own terrestrial radio will mention that. Mm-mm. No more than Stephen Moore and Glenn Beck will mention the fact that FDR was dealing with a crisis, with an economic damned well nightmare that had been created by Warren Gamaliel Harding, Calvin Coolidge, and Herbert Hoover. Just like, you know, big darkness soon come for us, too, after, 8 years of George Bush. And possibly eight years of, oh, Jesus, Mike Huckabee. Radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee. Hear that again. Some of this stuff just, you know, the first time you hear it, you go, oh, that's just crazy. He didn't say that. Yeah, he did. There's nothing wrong with your ears, and there's nothing wrong with your brain. Listen to Glenn Beck talking about first slapping his granddaddy around. Oh, there's some family values for you.
To tell you, I said on my radio show today, I'm beginning to come to a place where I love my grandfather, but I just want to slap him across the face for liking FDR. I think that was one evil son of a bitch.
Well, he certainly left us the bills, no doubt
he
about
sure
it.
He sure did, and he was the first one to go in and say, hey, let's...
Left us the bills? What bills are you paying, Moore? What bills are you paying, Beck? We had a balanced budget when Bill Clinton left office, you freaks! We had a surplus when Bill Clinton left office. Ah, FDR certainly left us holding the bag.
Let's nationalize health care and energy.
Nationalized health care? Are you telling me that we had universal health care in America and it just dried up before I could get to it? When did... I didn't get the memo. Where? When? How? Did I forget to sign up in high school when I went to register for the draft or something? Dang!
...and everything else, yep. And made this depression go on and on and on for a decade.
Made the depression go on and on and on for a decade. FDR took office on January the 20th, 1933. The Depression had been more or less underway since 1929. Within a little more than 8 years, we would have our entry into the Second World War. And the Second World War did, in fact, pull us out of the Great Depression. But now the hysterical revisionists on the right have decided, much as George Bush decided last week in Jerusalem, that we should have bombed the defenseless, pathetic souls in captivity at Auschwitz. The right wing has now decided that FDR deliberately kept the Depression going. And you know, it's not because they're under the influence of booze or drugs or anything like that. Yeah, that would be a convenient excuse. Well, you know, I was really screwed up at the time that I said that. So no, these people say it straight. These people say it stone cold, clean and sober. That means that they are some fundamentally lying, rotten, gas bag POSs. Never mind that FDR's leadership brought about the defeat of fascism. Maybe that's the point of the whole darn thing. These guys are upset about it. Because the whole effort of the Limbaughs and the Hannitys and the O'Reillys and the Savages and the Bortzes and the Morgans and the on and on and on and on. The whole point is to bring fascism to the United States of America. It's what they want. It's what they yearn for. Because it's what they are. And how many people heard Glenn Beck? He has pathetic ratings on television, not much in the way of radio ratings as compared to the big heavy hitters. But how many people who are dirt ignorant of history, because we're not very good at history, us Americans, frankly, and it's a pity that we aren't. How many people heard him and said, well, I'll be darned. I didn't know Franklin Roosevelt made the Depression longer than it had to be. Dang. All this time I thought he was a good man. And it turns out he was an SOB, just like that smart feller Glenn Beck done told me. And you think I'm crazy when I suggest that there's a very real possibility that Mike Huckabee could wind up the President of the United States of America? I'd like to be wrong, but if you think I am, I have a sneaking suspicion. The last laugh may be on you, but it won't be the laughter of joy. It will be the laughter of the grievous recognition that a drape of unmitigated evil has been thrown across our nation. Because every day, Glenn Beck is out there working at it. Every day, Rush Limbaugh is out there working at it. Every day, Sean Hannity is out there working at it. O'Reilly, working at it. Savage, working at it. All the way down to the last little wannabe in some podunk town with 50 with a 50-watt daytime signal who's a conservative, because that's what the kind of station is that his boss is running. The message is out there, and it is beamed out there on my airwaves and your airwaves and our airwaves with no compunction whatsoever to have any interest in facts or the truth. Let's go to the phones. Hi, who've I got?
Bob.
Hey, Ed.
How are you doing?
Well, you know, I'm all right, I reckon.
like everybody else, upset at the truth. I mean, at what they project to be the truth.
Yeah. I've heard more truth come out of a drunk's mouth at the end of the bar, Ed. Honest to God, I have.
Yeah. Well, and probably twice as smart as what Glenn Beck is. But it's just like I said before, you can get a decent news report up to about 8 o'clock, and then after that it becomes Nancy Grace. I don't know how you'd classify her. I really don't know. She thrives on bad manners, bad taste, bad reporting, if you call that reporting, and chasing disaster cases.
But the thing is, people seem to be able to take a look at Nancy Grace and realize that she's a clown. I don't know, with the rare exceptions of things like The Horn, this program, and the others on this network, Mike Malloy, the few Air America programs that are left, and maybe Keith Olbermann on MSNBC, there's nobody else out there calling BS in terms of broadcast. There's nobody else out there calling BS on this stuff.
Yeah. I can't stand them. I mean, Bob, that Glenn Beck gets on there, and if he couldn't swing his arms and go through all that Hollywood acting he does to apparently think he gets his point across that way, but he is a disaster that's already happened when they turned him loose. And I heard him say on one program that he was a conservative Democrat.
Huh?
Yeah. That's what he said. He said that what his politics was basically that of a conservative Democrat. And that kind of stuff like that is something else. You know, like I said, there's a guy comes on another station there that wears glasses that's really sharp, and I can't never think of it.
That's got to be Keith Olbermann.
What's the name of his program?
Countdown, MSNBC.
Yeah, that's it. You got it. He's I like him real well. But anybody that is mentally retarded enough to listen to the folks that you mentioned, you know, there's no hope. But Bob, I really believe that a Republican in that category is mentally miswired.
I mean, how many Republicans do you reckon there are out there right now, Ed, who are on this planet right now because their grandparents or their great-grandparents were saved from starvation and utter destruction by Franklin D. Roosevelt?
Well,
Most of them, because a lot of the so-called new Republicans, Ed, are former Southern Democrats whose butts were saved by FDR's programs.
I know that I wasn't very old, but I know that my dad and his brothers that are older, you're talking about backwoodsmen and non-educated. But still, they remember were names like Kankakee, Illinois, and Billings, Montana. They hoboed.
Yeah.
Just to do any kind of work, get something to eat, and then Roosevelt comes along and pulls them out of the ditch. And they knew that those folks that died off, that would be, you know, well over 100 years old now, came through that, you know, because they were in their 20s or around 20s back in 37 and 33. Well, you know, you had several depressions, but the biggest one, you're right, it was 29 up to whatever they decided it wasn't a depression no more, but the way I understood it and what little studying I did on it was the overproduction of goods and low wages so that you couldn't buy them. And I heard my dad say that he had seen a whole roll of bologna go for a nickel, but you didn't have the nickel.
Yeah. If you don't have the nickel, the roll of bologna may as well be $1 million.
Yeah, and it's the same way now. They'll work these people, in these especially like the sweater shops, the shoe factories, all of these type of goods, and stockpile them. But it's like a girl we taught them. Union movement and stuff like that. She said, I don't mind paying $20 for a sweater if I could make that much to pay for it. And it's just, they never learn. It's the greed of these factory people and these owners of these corporations that do this type of stuff. And it just seems like that once you go through a cycle like that, that a damn monkey can swing on a vine once he learns to swing on it. So it's very confusing.
Well, I tell you what, Ed, I try never to forget the words of my grandmother, because she and her husband were a relatively young married couple, you know, just hitting their 30s when the Depression hit. And she said, the Republicans promised us 3 meals a day, and they delivered. Oatmeal, miss a meal, and skip a meal.
Yeah. You was talking about fascism. I don't know where fascism and dictatorship, where the demarcation line is in that.
Well, fascism is predicated on a dictatorship.
Yeah. Well, George Bush said himself it'd be a lot easier to, and I never will forget this, I heard it myself, that it would be a lot easier to be if it was a dictatorship than to.
As long as he was the dictator.
Yeah, as long as he was doing the dictating.
And Republicans just think that's the funny, Ed. That's a real knee slapper.
Yeah.
Hey, Ed, I've got one more call I want to get to before the program ends, but it's awful good to hear from you.
Well, I sure appreciate the time, and I just wanted to put my 2 cents worth in there.
And it's far more than 2 cents worth, and you know that. So, you know, anytime. I'll put you back to hold, all right?
All right. Thank you.
Stand by, please. Hi, who have I got?
Kate on the coast.
Hey, Kate on the coast. How are you?
Doing all right, I reckon. But I'll get better. That's what Tom said.
Yeah.
If I got any better, I'd open a vein. You have just done a real good job of making a point tonight about how important it is that we stay on the air, and so I'm just explaining. explaining to folks that if you think that this can just keep going on like we're going on with complacency and inattentiveness to the business of bills and the internet and the servers and the equipment, you've got nothing but Glenn Beck to look forward to and that pig Limbaugh. And so I guess that's just my little pitch for tonight, my little 2 cents. Or $10 or whatever. So it's the 16th or 17th of the month.
And we're halfway through January, and we are at a little over $700.
Oh, my God. Wow.
But, you know, Christmas is hard on folks, and I understand that.
I understand that, too. I get
and there's a lot of stuff that's hard on folks.
I know. And I'm just they keep talking about, well, the economy is so good, and now people are starting to get a little bit squirmy, and the stock market is kind of an indicator that even the big boys are getting crazed, and the people who are buying up the gas, whatever those are called.
And, you know, the tough part is that this month Rick Goodner made the pledge on Rick's Place, and he's repeated it. For this month, everything that gets contributed, he matches toward us building our new studio. That doesn't mean, and maybe I didn't clear this up along the way, that doesn't mean that because there's, you know, $700 worth of contributions on January 16th, that does not mean that there's $1,400 worth of contributions, because what Rick is doing is building the studio.
Right, right. And if people have designated that this is for running expenses and this is for the studio.
Yeah, this is just what it takes us every month to get along.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know. We're on a rate to fall short by $1,600 this month.
Yeah, and we're already about $3,000 in the hole.
Well, we are closer to two, because I mean people did come through. $3,000. The goal is $3,000 for the month.
Right.
And you know, because we didn't hit the 3,000 last month, we got to 20. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so you've been running all these pigs on the horn. I feel like taking a shower now and rolling off and going to bed and covering up my head. And you know, and people, not everybody has access to Mike Malloy either, who are listening. Well, I guess they could listen online, but people without Sirius or Nova M. You know, he's not that accessible to a lot of folks either. So I don't know. I just get really nervous and makes me crazy.
Well, all I can say, Kate, is that we have to be here. If that makes any sense, we have to just be here.
Yes.
I mean, I'm hell bent to get to the elections. I'm not. Yeah. You know, I don't know how we'll do it. Beg, borrow, or steal, I guess. But you know, I will find a way to make it through the elections, because there's nobody within the sound of my voice more than me that wants to be wrong about Mike Huckabee. I'm almost to the point of praying I'm wrong about Mike Huckabee.
Yeah, when he went ranting about changing the Constitution, I just covered up my head and just said, oh well, here we go.
But you know, I'm doing every month that we're here, I'll bust my butt to find a way to make sure that we're here the next month.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to go away, because, again, all we have to do is be the last man standing.
Right.
There's a possibility we might get a little help from a Democratic Congress and a Democratic president. I don't mean the horn. I mean in terms of fixing what's broken with American media, fixing what's broken on the AM radio dial and the FM dial, there's a chance that might happen, and I want to be around if it does.
Yeah. Well, I don't frankly see that happening, and I just see the election going in the toilet. And even on Radio Romania the other day, they said America may have, history is being made. There may be a black man, a woman, or a Mormon for president. And I thought, damn, they've even picked the election over there.
Yeah.
Wow.
Romania?
Yeah.
And they've got an English language service, or you speak Romanian?
It's English language. I listen to
And see, that's the thing, though. The world is looking at this, and the world is worried.
Yes, they are. Oh, they are. Oh, God, they are worried. Oh, yeah. Oh, Jesus. Netherlands and Africa and UK and Germany and Russia. The world is just freaking out.
The people who get up and go to work in Saudi Arabia, you know, that editorial in the English language Arab Times that I read from last night that said everything that George Bush touches turns to dust and ashes.
Uh-huh.
Well, are they under the impression that somebody akin to him, somebody of similar economic and political philosophy, isn't also going to be part of the dust and ashes crowd?
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, supposedly he's going to leave on January 20th, right?
No.
Of 2009. Supposedly he's got to leave under the law of this nation.
Well, yeah, whatever. What law?
But.
They're not leaving. The people who are in power are not going to leave. I'm telling you.
Well, it's out of that Who song. Here's the new boss, same as the old boss.
Mm-hmm.
You can change the personalities, but the evil remains.
They're not going to give it up. They're not going to give it up. So the only way we can combat that is just keep the mics hot. And I'm just saying, do whatever you can. Give till it hurts. That's the only way we can keep at least some kind of balance or some kind of objectivity is to keep the mics hot at the horn and other places that are doing this. And that's all I have to say. I'm seeing it's getting close to the top of the hour, so, you know, just let me be your program director here.
Okay.
There must be some good song queued. Oh, yeah, Drive-By Truckers are queued up, right?
Yep, ready to roll. And they're ready to pop top on that can. You'd be surprised the number of people think that's a slide working on a semi-automatic pistol.
Jack and that shell, that's what I always hear. I don't even hear that beer can.
Yeah, it's a beer can, trust me. I asked
well,
the author.
Very good. You all take care, and it's good to see everybody in the chat tonight, too. So it's a zoo down here, and I'm very tired, and I get this way every night about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and I'm ready to crawl into my bed and cover up my head. So.
And just wait for the sun to rise and hope that it does.
Coming up through the sky, you bet. All right.
All right. I wait all night for calls like these.
Well, thanks for taking my call.
See you, Kate.
People out in the trees. Later, bye.
Bye. It is time to roll on. Up next, Strictly Confidential, the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio show with the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio host, Peter Godbold, on his way and ready to rock. Thanks, John Fox, our chief engineer. Thanks, Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk at whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to Peter Godbold, our IT professional. He, too, keeps the computers from going crunk. And thanks, many thanks, to all the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch. People who are genuinely working every day to make a difference and be part of the solution and not the problem. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.